as we get started this morning, we all know, we're aware that it is Easter Sunday. What happens on Easter? Of all the things that happen, I do know this, that Walmart wants your money, Starbucks wants your money, Amazon.com wants your money on Easter, but you are here. You aren't at Walmart this morning. You are not shopping online on your phone, as far as I can tell. You are here. You made plans to be here. You made special plans to be here today because something happened 2,000 years ago. And either you have embraced what happened, or perhaps you are interested in what happened and you are considering how what happened 2,000 years ago is going to have implications in your life today. Because something did happen 2,000 years ago. Something happened that was more than just our calendar changing from BC to AD, right? More than just adding a special Sunday holiday event on Easter Sunday. In fact, all of history led to that moment, and it all happened just as God said it was going to happen. It was the pinnacle of God's all-inclusive grace, which would take all of the world's sin, and it, because it's all-inclusive, it would take every single bit of your sin and my sin and the sin of the entire world, and it would be paid for, the sin debt of the entire world paid for. Now, we live in a time in history when this all-inclusive grace, which cost God so very much, this all-inclusive grace now tends to be treated like a clearance sale at a thrift store. Because pastors have stood on stages very similar to this stage this morning, and they have said things like this. Here it is, this all-inclusive grace of Jesus. And they've said, what will you give him for that grace? Because he'll take anything. Whatever you offer, he'll take. In fact, teachers have said that he is open to negotiation. He will take absolutely anything for that all-inclusive grace. He doesn't care what you give him. He just wants you to give him something. And it's almost as if they are begging, please, pretty please, do this for Jesus. He needs some friends, right? That's what it sounds like. So pray this prayer. Say these words, sign this card. Because even if it doesn't really change anything in your life, that's okay. Because King Jesus will take absolutely anything that you offer him, anything that he can get. You don't really have to do anything with it. Maybe just every once in a while you could give, right? Or you could show up on some Sundays that you're free. Pray this, say that. Jesus will take absolutely anything you give him. Now, in this series, we have been trying to clear that up. And today, we hope that this could be for you, possibly, a very important Sunday, maybe one of the most important Sundays of your life. And we hope that the very words of Jesus himself will help you understand his all-inclusive grace. That's what we hope. That's what we are desiring. Now, so here we go. We're going to be looking at one of the most famous passages in the Christian scriptures today. And it's a passage where Jesus asked his disciples this question. He says, who do you say that I am? And then Peter very quickly answers the question and he says, you are the Messiah. Now, Peter's talking about the Messiah that God had been promising for millennia. Now, Peter had been hanging out with Jesus some time now, and so it appears that his thinking, the way Peter's processing things, is being influenced by God's Spirit, and he's beginning to think Jesus' kingdom thoughts. He's learning and leaning in to what God is giving him, and he's developing the mind of Christ. Now, that's the goal of following Jesus. That is the goal of discipleship. We want to gain more and more the mind of Christ. We want to begin seeing the world the way Jesus sees the world and interacting in this world the way Jesus interacted in the world. Now, immediately after Jesus asked him, "Who do you say I am?" And Peter says, "You're the Messiah." This happens next. Verse 31 is where we're going to pick up this. So let me read this to you. We are in Mark chapter 8, verse 31. Then Jesus began to tell them, "The Son of Man," that's Jesus describing himself, "the Son of Man must suffer many terrible things and be rejected by the elders, the leading priests, and the teachers of religious law." Jesus is clearly saying, something's going to happen to me, Jesus, he's saying, and it's going to involve suffering, pain, rejection, humiliation, not honor. That's a big deal. Jesus makes it very clear now. He goes on and he says he would be killed, talking about Jesus saying, "I'm going to be killed." He would be killed, which means we know to die on a cross, it's going to involve all of those things that he just said. It's going to mean that he was despised and hated and rejected by men. And Jesus assures them, he assures them his death is not going to be the end. His death is going to lead to life. And then he tells them this, but, so he says he's going to be killed, but 3 days later, he would rise from the dead. And eyewitnesses and Jewish history and Roman history all tell us Jesus did exactly that. Jesus did that. He did that. And that is why we're here today. It's why we gather every Sunday. And it's also why we gather during the weeks in small groups to meet together, because Jesus did exactly that. Verse 32, he goes on, Mark goes on, as he talked about this openly with his disciples. I just want to pause and say, Jesus was not being cryptic. There were moments and times when Jesus was being cryptic. Here he is not. Jesus wasn't being cryptic. He's being very, very plain, very clear that the Christ, the Messiah, is going to have to endure some really, really difficult things. And he wants them to know this, because in a few moments, Jesus wants to be plain, very clear about what he's going to suffer, because he wants to be very clear. And as we begin this morning, we were looking at Peter, who was thinking more like the mind of Christ. But in this moment, he loses the mind of Christ and he speaks from his own thinking. And here's what he's thinking: suffering, not part of rejection. That's not part of my plan. It's not part of my plan for the Messiah, and it's certainly not part of my plan for my own life. And it wasn't part of the plan for John or Matthew or Peter or Judas, any of them. It wasn't part of their plan. Suffering was not part of the plan. And so here's what happened. Peter took him, that's Jesus, aside and began to reprimand him for saying such things. But suffering and rejection are to be laid upon Jesus. It was God's plan, and it we're going to find out, and they were going to find out, it was a divine necessity. And any attempt to keep Jesus from that suffering and Jesus from that rejection, any attempt to keep him from that humiliating death, we're going to find out, would be directed and influenced by the evil one. So Jesus, thinking, immediately shuts down what Peter's corrupted human thinking, and we could say the evil one's attempt at doing. Jesus shuts it down. Verse 33, Jesus turned around and he looked at his disciples, then reprimanded Peter. "Get away from me, Satan," he said. "You are seeing things merely from a human point of view." Now, in just a short time, Jesus would spend the night with his closest disciples praying, and Jesus would be praying, and Jesus will be struggling, and it's going to happen in the garden. And then he's going to be arrested, and he's going to be illegally tried during the night. And Peter then, at that point, would be watching Jesus from a distance, and Peter is going to deny that he knows Jesus. Now, that's not happening yet. That is to come. But here in this moment, right after Jesus tells them that he's got to suffer and that he's going to die, tells them what he must do, Jesus now lists very clearly and very plainly the essential requirement for being a follower of Jesus. So this all-inclusive grace demands from others an all-inclusive response. And Jesus is going to let them know that both are costly. His all-inclusive grace is costly, and our all-inclusive response is costly. Here's how he describes it, verse 34. Then calling the crowds to join his disciples, he said, "If any of you wants to be my follower," I want to pause here. Jesus in this moment is offering an invitation. And notice he's giving them a choice. You don't have to be my follower, but if you want to, I'm going to give you some very important information you need. And I find this interesting because he's not going to go to either extreme. He doesn't go to the extreme where he is going to force them to be his follower. He's giving them a clear choice. But he doesn't go to the other extreme where he kind of brushes by the cost of following Jesus. He doesn't cheapen, he doesn't lessen, he doesn't make it easier, he doesn't dumb it down. So he doesn't go to that extreme, and he doesn't go to that extreme. He lands right here in the middle, and he's going to be very, very clear. If you decide to respond to that invitation and be my follower, he says, if any of you wants to be my follower, you must give up your own way. In other words, deny yourself. Deny yourself. We're going to have to deny ourselves in the same way that Peter would soon deny Jesus. We must deny ourselves in that way. We must look at our old self, and we must say, as Peter said to Jesus, "I don't know him." We must look at our old selves and say, "Oh, that old harlot, I don't know him, that old harlot. I don't know him." Jesus says you will deny yourself. You must deny yourself the basic human desire to direct your own life and instead allow Jesus, the King, to call the shots with an all-inclusive yes. That's what it means. It's to look at Christ alone, not at what I want, not at what you want. To look at Christ alone, not my way, not the way I feel like things should go, not the way you feel like things should go. In fact, even though he's mentioning the difficult path, it's almost as if we don't even look at the difficult path. We recognize that it will be difficult, but we just simply keep following him who is leading us down that path. Deny yourself, Jesus says. And then he says, take up your cross and follow me. To deny what you believe will lead your life to a rich and satisfying life for yourself. You deny that, and instead you take up your own instrument of humiliation and torture and death. And Jesus says, and follow me wherever that might lead. Jesus made it clear beyond all doubt that suffering is his destiny. But not only is it his destiny, it is for everyone who chooses to follow him. You see, Jesus in this moment, he's not inviting them to lunch. They too are going to suffer and they're going to be rejected. The image that Jesus wants in their mind is that image of that Roman death march. A condemned man going to die, forced to carry that cross beam, which is to be his place of execution. And by the time Mark is writing this, he understands because he saw Jesus do it. But they have not yet seen this talk of cross and dying. I can only imagine it was blowing their minds as Jesus was saying this. But now this side of the cross and this side of writing this gospel down, Mark, likely writing the words of Peter and Peter's experiences, he had seen Jesus do that very thing. And now he understood it more than ever. Jesus is Christ. Only if he suffers, if he is rejected, and if he dies. And now Mark understands this as well. A disciple is only a disciple if he shares in the suffering, the rejection, and crucifixion of Christ. And it's not just any kind of suffering. I mean, we're not talking about just the horrible suffering of life that involves illness and surgery and cancer and accidents and tragedy. It's not that kind of suffering. And it's not just any kind of rejection. It's not a rejection that we face from other people because of our own bad choices and our own bad decisions. Jesus is calling us to a specific suffering, a specific rejection for the sake of Christ. Suffering and being rejected. Jesus doesn't say you're going to have to go out and look for your cross. For everyone willing, it's almost as if for every Christ follower, Jesus will have a Jesus-provided cross right there ready for you to pick up. And what happens on that cross? On that cross for you, there is a shift. The center of your life moves from you being concerned about yourself or your own things that you are concerned about to a reckless abandon to the will of God, where you suffer and you face rejection and the death of yourself. But the cross is not the end. No, Jesus meets us at that cross. It all starts at the cross. When Christ calls a man, he bids him to come and die and find that he might truly live. And to that we can say, oh, the wonderful cross. Next, Jesus says this, if you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake, and for the sake of the good news, you will save it. Now, this phrase spoken by Jesus would become an early slogan for martyrs. When someone was suffering for Christ and they were dying for Christ. The slogan for them became "For Christ and the Gospel." That's where that came from. Jesus is giving us the image of a courtroom. In other words, if you are on trial for your life because of following Jesus, if you try to preserve your life, if you try to preserve the way you want to live your life and life as you want it, if you try to preserve your life, be your own boss, deny Christ and lift yourself up, make yourself the one that says, okay, this is how my life is going to be. I'm going to go with that. Jesus is saying you might make your life easier. You might make it more comfortable. If you're going to deny your all-in, all-inclusive commitment to Jesus in order to make your life more comfortable, then you will end up losing your life eternally. But he says, if in that courtroom you willingly die to yourself and you declare that you belong to Jesus, Jesus is saying there you might lose your life by the judgment of that human court. You might lose your status in the culture in which you live, but your life will be eternally safe. Jesus is saying the cross is important for our salvation. And Jesus is saying the cross is important for you. That suffering, that rejection, because you follow Christ, he says that is important to you. Now, not everyone's cross is going to be the same. Our cross might be like his first disciples. It might be leaving our comfortable home, or it might be leaving security behind, a job behind at times, to follow Jesus. Or our cross might be the loss of some relationship that we have to walk away from because in that relationship, we're not chasing after Jesus. The cross might be, like it was for most of the disciples, a literal martyr's death. Or this will be all of us. The cross might be choosing Christ over whatever we're most interested in this life. The point is, it's a different cross, probably for all of us, but most important, whatever our cross is, it is the same death every time. We die to our old life in order to live this new life of costly grace. We die to our own desires and our own demands. Bonhoeffer said, every call of Jesus is a call to die. It's picking up our cross and it's following Christ regardless of the suffering. It's regardless of the rejection. Jesus now moves from this picture of a courtroom, and he gives us a picture of business and finance. Here's what he says, but it's the very same point. Verse 36, and what do you benefit if you gain the whole world, but you lose your own soul? Is anything worth more than your soul? That soul in you is that part of you that lives forever. And Jesus is saying, are you willing to deny Jesus, to deny the good news, and sell your soul eternally for whatever it is you want in that moment? You see, the cost of denying yourself, of taking up your cross and following him, is going to be following him onto that narrow path. And it will be, Jesus declares, filled with suffering and rejection and the death of self. But that suffering, rejection, and the death of self is nothing compared to the eternal cost of denying him. You know, some people, especially, we've been picking on us Americans a lot in this series. There are so many people who experience something with Jesus, something that can only be described as merely emotional, some kind of connection, some kind of burst of good feelings. And they develop an interest in Jesus, if not even an infatuation, and it could last for years. But the problem is it doesn't last. It is temporary. It's shallow because it requires nothing from me except to bask in the bliss of that emotion. But that's not what Jesus is describing. And he doesn't describe it like that because that's not real. And it is certainly not lasting because eventually that will always fade and it will reveal itself for what it is, simply an empty emotional response. You see, when there is no noticeable change, no recognizable difference between an ordinary man and a man claiming to be committed to Jesus, then that means they have never met Christ, where Christ invites everyone to begin their journey, and it's at his cross and at their own cross. Because the all-inclusive grace of Jesus demands from us an all-inclusive response that can be summarized in the phrase of Jesus, the death and the denial of self. Jesus goes on, verse 38, if anyone is ashamed of me, of them my message. In other words, if they're running from the death of themselves, if they're running from rejection, running from suffering in these adulterous and sinful days, the Son of Man will be ashamed of that person when he returns in the glory of his Father with the holy angels. This that we're talking about today is the first call that you get from Jesus. The death of self. And the result of that is that one abandons all their attachments to this world. Described by Jesus, denying self, dying to self. And as we think of that death, it's not the terrible end. It's the wonderful beginning. It's the wonderful cross where Christ bids us come and die and find that we might truly live. And this step into following Jesus, this step of discipleship, it's not limited to what we can see right now, to what we can comprehend right now. In fact, this step, because it's all inclusive, it plunges us into the deep waters of the unknown. Because we don't know what suffering's coming. We don't know what rejection is coming. And we're simply trusting the one who's already there, who's calling us to follow him, who's calling us into the deep, because Jesus was in the deep. Listen to how Matthew records this of Jesus. Matthew 26, verse 39. Going a little further, he, that's Jesus, fell with his face to the ground and he prayed. My Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken. What is the cup of suffering? Be taken from me. Yet, not as I will, but as you will. Verse 42 tells us he went away a second time and he prayed, my Father, if it is not possible for this cup to be taken away unless I drink it, may your will be done. Jesus knew in that moment. He knew. He already knew, but it just was confirmed for him in that moment. The cross, there was no bypassing it. No bypassing the suffering, the rejection, the shame that was going to come to him from the cross. The only way to end that suffering and that pain and that rejection was to go through it. And yes, it was costly and it was all inclusive. But 3 days later, he walked out of the tomb alive, just as he said he would. So I hope you see, it doesn't end at the cross. It doesn't end with rejection. It doesn't end with pain. It doesn't end with suffering. It doesn't end with death. And your cross that he calls you to, it doesn't end with death. It doesn't end with rejection or suffering either. Your cross. But it does start there. And now, this moment, Jesus, through God's Spirit, says to us, if any of you wants to be my follower, you must give up your own way, take up your cross, and follow me. If you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake, for the sake of the good news, you will save it. And from the other side of the cross, from the other side of resurrection, Jesus calls you. But the only way for you to get to him is through the cross that he sets before you. Die to yourself. Die to your way of life. Die to your attachments to this world. Take up your cross and follow Jesus into the deep, to unknown rejection, to unknown suffering. But we are assured by Jesus, he will give you life. Or we can avoid it all. Back to Mark. But what do you benefit if you gain the whole world but you lose your soul? Is anything worth more than your soul? Jesus asked. And I just simply say, as we are in week number 8 of a 9-week series, some of you this morning may be ready for that step to say, I'm ready to make Jesus the boss of my life. Maybe you've been waiting and listening and thinking and debating and putting it off. But right now, there's something in your heart in this moment. You're ready to jump in, all in with Jesus, all inclusive. Because something in your heart tells you you need to, and you're ready to. And in fact, we could use the word you are compelled to. And in this moment, maybe for you, perhaps you're going to resist him no longer. And I just simply want to pray a prayer with you, for you. And I just call it a me too prayer. A prayer that says, gee, if you agree with the words that are coming out of my mouth, describing what I'm getting ready to describe, surrendering a heart, a life to Jesus. If that describes what your heart is saying and you have never expressed that to Jesus before, then right now in your own heart, you don't have to stand up. You don't have to be called out. Just simply right where you are, if you will say, Jesus, me too. But I want you to understand, this prayer, this conversation with God, where you are surrendering your heart to him, it is a surrender of your whole life. And while you don't understand the depth of where Jesus is going to take you in your future, what we are surrendering is our right to say, no, Jesus, I won't go there. I'll do many things you want, Jesus, but I won't do that. I'll surrender many things, Jesus, but I won't surrender that. And that's not surrender. That's saying, Jesus, I would like what you have to offer as long as it doesn't cost me too much. And that's not what Jesus offers. The offer Jesus gives you is all-inclusive. His all-inclusive grace will cover your entire life, every sin you've ever committed, every sin that's in your future. But it requires a life that says, Jesus, I'm all in. And I may not understand where you're going to take me, but I'm letting you know in advance. As we get there and you say, Harley, I want to deal with this in your life, I'm going to move you this direction, the answer is already yes. And if that is what your heart is saying, then all you have to do is say, Jesus, me too. That's me too. And here's what it means. Do you agree that Jesus died for the sins of the world? And 3 days later, he walked out of the tomb, just like Scripture said, just like he said he would do. Do you believe that? Then you simply say, Jesus, because you died for me, because you paid the price for my sins, I am saying you now own my life, Jesus. This life is yours. And I may not understand everywhere you're going to take me, and I may not understand yet all the ends of your words and scriptures, Jesus. But as you walk me through this life, as your spirit leads me through this life, I'm telling you now, the answer is yes. The answer is yes. You can have all of me. And if that was your prayer right now, if that's what you're saying to Jesus right now, he's listening. He's listening. And it means that spiritually, somehow, as only God can, he is taking you out of the hands of the evil one and placing your life into the hands of Jesus. And Jesus said, I have never lost one that the Father has given me. Some of us this morning, we have made that decision. And we know that we're in the hands of Jesus. We have decided to submit our lives to him. But somehow, over the course of time, our all-inclusive yes, where we said, yes, Jesus, you can have my life, somehow slowly over the course of time, instead of all-inclusive life, it became, oh, Jesus, you can have some here and you can have some there. It's a some here and some there commitment, Jesus. And something about us changed. Something about our perspective toward God, our perspective towards Jesus changed. And I just simply say, if God's Spirit is using that statement to pierce something in your heart, then here's what I have to say. You need to have a conversation with God. Talk about that with God. Because where does He want to lead you? What is He telling you right now? What is He requiring of you right now? And then what is your answer to Him? Because I know this. The invitation that Jesus offers you, you can only come to Him through the cross. His cross and your cross, where you die to yourself. Oh, it's a wonderful cross. Where He bids you come and die and find that you might truly live. Oh, the wonderful cross. And if you're taking a step with Jesus this week, would you please let us know on your connection card? The only way we can encourage you and help you and walk with you as you journey with Jesus is if you let us know. Let us know how we can encourage you. Let us know how we can walk with you. I'm so glad you've been here today. We're going to sing. I hope you'll read the lyrics of the words on the screen. I hope you'll sing with us. But let these lyrics sink very deeply into your heart. And may these words of Jesus go with us this week. Let's sing. I'll come back up in just a moment and pray with us before we leave. But let me pray right now before we worship Jesus together. God, thank you for the wonderful cross. Thank you. Thank you that you have asked us to come to you through the cross. Because of your cross, Jesus, and because of the cross you set before us, where you say you must die to yourself, pick up your cross and follow you. May we follow you. May our hearts worship you now. Because you went to that wonderful cross, and there you bid us to come and die and find that we may truly live. Jesus, we offer this worship to you. And it is in your name, Jesus, we pray these things. Amen.